The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. You've got the H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on those dirt trails and kick up some mud. Or the third row seating gets your whole family in to experience the thrill together. The dual wireless charging pads make sure that no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead cell phone. Think about those adventurous activities you can do, like me, taking a ski trip up with the family, maybe going on a camping expedition, anything and everything. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Are you looking for a new basketball shoe? If so, this is Gary Parrish here to tell you that the New Balance 2-Way V4 features the groundbreaking use of fuel cell technology with fresh foam, creating the ultimate combination of rebound and cushioning. Every step feels explosive and dynamic, and the upper construction features a lightweight textile that's supportive and breathable. So whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the 2-Way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the 2-Way at newbalance.com. Hey there, it's Gary Parrish. Welcome back to the CBS Sports Ion College Basketball Podcast, where we sometimes discuss camel fighting, dodo birds, and leaky black. The Ion College Basketball Podcast is presented by Jersey Mike's. Jersey Mike's, us up above. Matt Norlander is here with me. He's in Stamford, Connecticut at the CBS Sports HQ studios. I'm in a hotel in New York City after being in studio for CBS Sports Network. If you're watching on YouTube, smash the like button like you're Brandon Davies. It's Friday night, for crying out loud. You have consent. And if you haven't yet subscribed to the CBS Sports College Basketball YouTube channel, please do that while you're here. Okay, let's get into it. It was a wild Friday night in the 2023 NCAA tournament. We started the day with two number one seeds left. We ended the day with zero number one seeds left. First, San Diego State, my Aztecs, eliminated top seed Alabama, 71-64. Then Miami eliminated top seed Houston, 89-75. So for the first time ever, we have an Elite Eight with zero number one seeds, which means something other then a number one seed will win the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2016. Dead leg. We're going to discuss both of these games independently later, but let's start with your reaction to what has arguably become, if not clearly become, the wackiest bracket we've ever seen.
It's one of the wackiest, although the current total, if you added up all the remaining seeds in the Elite Eight, is not the highest ever. So there is a counter wacky argument. And by the way, the last time there was no one seed that won it, it was in Houston, which is where we'll be going. It's been a really fun past couple of nights here. I was obviously at the Garden on Thursday, and I will be there again on Saturday to watch FAU play against Kansas State. Feels like the story we roll with here first, GP, is number one overall seed, right? I mean, the fact that we lose the number one overall seed, we lose all the one seeds, but Alabama going down means that Louisville 2013 is still the last time we had a one seed number one overall win a national championship. It's only happened three times in the 19 tournaments that we've done since this was started in 2004. And it also means that we're going to have the fourth Final Four without a one seed ever. 80, 06, and 2011 are the times that it's happened before. It's been wild. What was your primary takeaway on the day?
Well, obviously, you know, getting to an Elite Eight with no number one seeds is historic. And I think everybody who covers college basketball or even follows it has tweeted or retweeted this. But the most interesting fact as it pertains to where we're at in this moment is that either Creighton, Florida Atlantic, Kansas State, or San Diego State is guaranteed to play for the national championship.
That's how the bracket works. That's correct. People love this, by the way. They love going, I'm looking at the bracket, and one of these teams got to do it. They love it.
Well, it's
Kansas State has been like a top 20 team all season long. So I get that. Preseason last team in the Big 12. I get it. Like, Kansas State hasn't been to a Final Four in 60 years. And Creighton was a preseason top 10 team. So on one hand, you have a team that's supposed to be here or was supposed to be here in the preseason. And then you have another team that's got the best transfer in the country and a guy who's like the king of New York City right now. So it's not like we've got like complete random showing up to the party. Like San Diego State's been the best program in the Mountain West. I get it. Like, it's going to be weird. Like, we're going to see either the Aztecs or the Blue Jays or the Owls. No, I will not be doing an Al impression on this podcast, or the Wildcats from K-State in the title game. Like, that's going to be weird. That's going to be different. But I'm a little bit more taken by the fact that of all the eight coaches remaining, we got Greg McDermott. We've got Brian Dutcher, Dusty May, Jerome Tang, Dan Hurley, Mark Few, Rodney Terry, when we taking that interim tag off, and Jim Larrañaga. We're going to have a first-time national championship head coach, no matter what. Someone's going to be cutting down the nets for the first time in their career, and I think that's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, like, I get it. Creighton was preseason top 10. Kansas State's been good all season. Florida Atlantic's won 34 games. San Diego State is an outright league champ and league tournament champ. All of these teams are good. That's not the point. The point is, like, if I would have just gave you those collection of teams at any point this season and said, hey, one of them is absolutely going to play on the first Monday night in April, you'd have been like, It would have paused me.
I would have been paused. I absolutely would have been paused.
That's all. It's just it's a weird group of four to think that one of these teams is guaranteed to be 40 minutes away from a national championship in a few weeks.
Well, can I also say this? I said this on HQ earlier. This did wind up being, like, there have been, I don't know, GP, it feels like, you know, maybe like three of the past six or seven seasons we have had, reasonably so, we have had dialogue about how, like, man, this season's crazy in college basketball. We got all these unranked teams upsetting top 10 teams, and we got all these, like, these things that you see. Like, it's been the second time in 50 years where six top 10 teams lost over the weekend, like that kind of stuff. But then you get to the tournament, and, like, you look up and you get to a regional final or final four, and, like, you know, a couple of high seeds have done what they needed to do, or we have teams that have established themselves as the best teams in the sport. This time, it isn't that, because everyone was like, okay, it was starting to form, like, especially if, like, Bama and Houston had won on Friday, and it was like, all right, the one seed's on the opposite side, like, they almost feel like they are headed for a collision course. That didn't happen. So we do have as parity driven of a tournament as the regular season indicated that we would have. So, you know, there has been a balance to the equation of what we thought was going to happen. Agreed?
Yeah, like, we had a wacky season where, like, there was a lot of different number one teams and all in surprise teams. But usually you're right. It feels like, if not, it actually does. Like, the bracket, it ends where it should end. Like, we might take a wild path, but then you look up and you go, all right, Final Four. Like, at least two of these teams are teams that I always thought would get here or thought could get here. And yeah, maybe one of them is a surprise. You get a George Mason or a Loyola Chicago or a VCU. But on our way, like, on the road to the Final Four, as they say, we typically have some wild curves, but you look up at the end of it and you go, okay, well, this kind of makes sense. And again, on some level, having, say, Creighton in the title game might make some sense. But I'll just go back 2 weeks. On the Monday after Selection Sunday, you have an AP poll that is published. Mm-hmm. And those four teams on that left side of the bracket that are remaining, Kansas State was 15th, San Diego State was 18th, Florida Atlantic was 25th, Creighton was unranked. So in the most recent AP poll, none of these teams were in the top 14, and one of them is playing for the national title. You put it that way, it'll pause you.
Man, I love this tournament, though. I get it. Like, people are like, oh, we lost so many of these either big name coaches or power school. I get that. I love every tournament in every form, no matter how we get there, how we go from 68 to 64 to 32 to 16 to 8 to 42 to 1. I'll take it every single time.
Let me ask you this then. Okay, you love it because you live it.
I live it.
I love it because I know these people. And
okay, can we just start? You love it because you live it, man. You love the sport. I love it because,
I know who these people are. But no, that's what I mean is that there would be something like that makes me genuinely happy about seeing Greg McDermott go to a Final Four and Creighton, this awesome basketball program in this amazing city with this incredible fan base. Like, there's something Creighton in the Final Four. Wow, good for them. Florida Atlantic in the Final Four. Happy for Dusty. Happy for the entire program. Kansas State in the Final Four. What are you talking about? Happy for Jerome Tang.
What are we talking about here?
Keontae Johnson, Marquise Noel, the King of New York thing is unbelievable. The way that played out in the Garden. I'd be thrilled for Brent Stover. San Diego State, like that's an awesome basketball program. And they've been consistently high level for a while and yet banged on because they didn't have NCAA tournament success. The idea that they could be playing for national championship, awesome. I dig all of this stuff. But is it good for the sport of college basketball? Just because you and I can get excited about it. Because I've seen people argue about this online tonight. It's you tweet either Creighton, Florida Atlantic, Kansas State, San Diego State is guaranteed to play in the national championship game. And you get people going, oh, wow, this is great. And then you get other people going, hey, just let me know who wins it at the end. I don't care anymore. Where are you at on this? Is it good or bad for the sport?
I think it's fine. You might not see. I will see on the ratings, actually. I don't know.
Let me tell you, the ratings are going to be bad.
Okay. Well, there you go. Especially if it's a one-off deal, you know, whatever. Like what you have here is teams outside the power conference structures, somewhat like FAU, SDSU, although SDSU is probably going to the Pac-12 soon, but and where it is right now, competing. We have teams uncommonly in spots they aren't normally here. Like Jerome Tang, Brian Dutcher, and Dusty May. Those coaches didn't have a tournament win to their name, and now they're all going to coach for the Final Four. That's just incredible, man. And you mentioned the no one seeds. It's even more than that. Texas is the only top two seed, and we had never before this year had any, even if you put 2-1 seeds but no other twos or no other ones, we hadn't had that. Like, we've never had a year where there's been one or fewer top two seeds in the Elite Eight. So I get it. Like, but on my end, what the TV rating is not going to affect how I enjoy this sport, how I cover it, the passion I bring to it. Every single tournament is different. And from a broad perspective, yeah, if anything, the tournament's going to get attention over the weekend because it is so random and the teams that we have here and how different it is. And I'll take it, but I can hear the argument otherwise, man. This is what will happen. You put 68 teams in a bracket, anything can happen. Semi-random results generator, and that's what we're at. We got Owls and Blue Jays. I've been so busy, I didn't even get to. How about this? Creighton makes it. I'll look up what a Blue Jay sounds. I feel like I owe it. You know, Boone did a great job. Your impressions have been getting progressively worse over the past like 2 months. Wow. They've been terrible. I mean, they've been awful. But I feel like I got to step up. Blue Jays get in. I'll check out a Blue Jay noise and I'll try and bring it on the Sunday pod if they get to the Final Four. But you got Blue Jays, you got Owls, you got Wild on that side of the bracket. It does feel like there's the right side feels heavier, right? Between people going to call UConn Gonzaga the de facto national championship game, which is, oh, by the way, hilarious. Okay, so now we're going to give Gonzaga the credit. Okay, good deal. And then you got Texas on that side and even Miami. People are going to say whatever team comes out of that is going to be the default champion. But we'll have to just see about that. That seems like the likely scenario, though.
If I gave you right side of the bracket at minus 150 right now to win the national championship,
I got
to
take it. I got to take it.
You would lay the 150 and you would take the right side. I saw it first off. Don't threaten me with a Blue Jay impersonation. I'll paint myself blue.
Okay. So you want to one? I'm merely trying to make a bird noise to get it to get to the level that Boone. By the way, Boone completely outclassed.
He nailed it.
He came into.
I was
this
happy
room.
For him.
He came into this podcast and said, "Get the hell out of my way with your little I'm an owl, whatever it was," and brought it, man, and brought it, and so I'm just trying to step it up. But if you want to go, I blew myself. By all means.
I got to calm down a little bit.
Yeah,
I was FaceTiming with my 6-year-old tonight, and he randomly went, "I'm a horn dog." And I said, "You're not a horn
dog."
Yeah, he called himself a horn dog. I said, "Buddy, you can't."
Only your daddy's allowed to call himself.
Yeah, you
that.
Can't. You can't identify at 6 as a horn dog. And he just kept going, "I'm a horn dog." It was outright. I wish I knew how to tape stuff or record it or whatever it is you do, whatever it is people do. You know, all these people are always getting secretly recorded. I wish I knew how to not secretly record my 6-year-old. Can't do it. I'm gonna paint myself blue. You can do a Blue Jay impression. I'll just sit here being blue.
All right.
So I saw somebody in the YouTube comments say, I thought the early round ratings were really, really good. They were really, really good.
Best ever.
Watch these next two rounds. Yeah. It'll probably be tough. I do think that what has happened is good in the sense that it highlights how inclusive the sport is and how accessible success can be, right? In college basketball, you can achieve notable things from nearly anywhere. Not everywhere, but from nearly everywhere. We just had Princeton in the Sweet 16. We've got Florida Atlantic in the Elite Eight. I like that it proves high major level, mid-major level, you can achieve notable things in this sport from nearly everywhere. That's good. The bad is that it is almost certainly going to be a television ratings nightmare, because no matter who comes out of the right side of that bracket, the left side of that bracket is going to create some not great ratings, probably. And I saw somebody say, hey, listen, the country's falling in love with Jerome Tang and Marquise Noel. And I think that is true on some level. You know, Patrick Mahomes was tweeting about Marquise Noel.
Love it.
I love it, right? The idea that, and we talked about this last night, we don't need to get into it again, but like, that was awesome. Marquise Noel at the Garden was awesome. And that is becoming a big story. But just to place it in proper context about how unfamiliar it really was to people until it happened, I was here in New York today, and I bumped into somebody who is a prominent sports media figure. Smart guy, talented guy, really good. And we bumped in and we were talking for a minute, and he said, so this Noel guy, how has he been good all year? Like he didn't know. He like acknowledged, mm-hmm. like I just really, yeah. I never heard of him. That's where we're at. Even the Marquise Noel story that is awesome now is not a story that was familiar with anybody outside of our world, our very defined world, as recently as a couple of days ago. And so that is just, having had conversations with television executives over the years who monitor this stuff and understand it way better than we could, honestly, you're better having a very good but never great Michigan State team in the Elite Eight than you are most of these teams in the Elite Eight. The big brands are what people watch, and we've lost, not all of them, but we've lost most of them. And oh, by the way, 8 of the top 11 teams in the country, according to KenPom, are now gone. 8 of the top 11. Only UConn, Texas, Gonzaga remain. And I would say this is, I'd put it in the negative column. It's awesome that somebody, some school, some coach, some players are about to achieve something that they've never achieved. That's unbelievable. Those memories forever. The other side of it is that I think as we watch the rest of this tournament, with UConn maybe being an exception, Gonzaga just because they're so familiar, but as we watch the rest of this tournament, you're not going to feel like you're watching the best teams as much as you feel like you're watching the teams that have been playing really well over the past couple of weeks. And maybe that's not much different than, say, the Major League Baseball playoffs when a wild card team gets to the World Series, but it does feel like if you put a list together of teams that college basketball experts thought could win the national championship 3 weeks ago, almost all of those teams are no longer in this tournament.
Let's get to the ones that have been knocked out. Let's recap the night.
All right. Up next, we will talk about Friday night's four games individually. But first, you know what time it is. It's time for a word from our partners.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Survivor 46 is here, and so is On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast, and we have a twist this season. The winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares, will be joining us every week.
We're going behind the scenes of the biggest moments, the how and the why things happen, and the strategy and analysis you can only get from someone like me, a Survivor winner.
Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.
So the first game that tipped Friday was Alabama-San Diego State. The final score was SDSU 71, Alabama 64. Crimson Tide shot 32.4% from the field, 11.1% from three. They were 3 of 27 from beyond the arc. They led by 9. Mm-hmm. They trailed by 9. They lost the game by 7. Brandon Miller was 3 of 19 from the field to cap off a historically bad NCAA tournament. Deadleg, was this what happened to Alabama on Friday night? An indictment of Alabama's style of play, or just something that can happen in a single elimination tournament?
How about this? The latter, I think. Alabama had 64 points tonight. It averaged 82 a game this season. Shot 32% from the field. For the season, it averaged 44. It averaged 10 made threes a game. You know how many it had tonight?
Yes, 3. I do. Just said it.
Exactly. Just 3 of 27? What? So if you're like a little bit of the indictment of the style of play, 11.1% from the field, not a single fast break point. Not one for Alabama in this game. But it's, you know, give San Diego State credit, man. San Diego State has held teams to 50, 61, 49, 57, 57, 52, and 64 in his past seven games. That's 55.7% or 55.7 points per game on average. And Alabama had an issue occasionally this season by not starting off strong. It had low scoring halves. And in those games and some of those losses, they weren't able to overcome it. Credit to San Diego State. They were able to keep him in check. Brandon Miller had a terrible tournament. He really did. And credit to San Diego State for, I mean, some of the shots just didn't fall, but he also didn't play well.
He also took bad shots over and
over.
He
took bad shots. By the way, Nate Oates has one win over a single digit seed in his career in six NCAA tournament runs for Nate Oates. Just as a note, like there's, he'll get, if he's really as good as we think that he can be as a head coach, and he'll eventually, get rid of that. But there have been some disappointments there. How about this on Brandon Miller? You're seeing if you're watching right now, you can see the graphic on the screen. Brandon Miller had 28 points in 85 minutes of NCAA tournament play, and that came against Corpus Christi, Maryland, and San Diego State. This is from CBS Sports Research. This is incredible. Miller is the only player since at least 1960 and likely ever, according to our researchers, to shoot under 20%. He was, 19.6% from the field, technically, in a single tournament with at least 40 field goal attempts, man. It was a bad showing. Brandon Miller had 10 turnovers and 8 made field goals in the tournament. He had more turnovers than made shots. Nobody had that. We're talking about a guy that was starting to, in addition to everything else that was happening, obviously, had really started to garner discussion about should he go over Scoot at number 2 in the draft. And whatever, we'll get to that in later in the spring when we have to talk about draft stuff there. But his lack of ability to kind of seize the game was the biggest thing, without a doubt. Credit to San Diego State. It's in the Elite Eight for the first time in program history. Mountain West is in the Elite Eight for the first time in league history. And Alabama losing is now among all programs to have at least 6 Sweet 16 appearances. Bama is the worst ever. 1-9 is a program in the Sweet 16. 1-9. The Miller stuff, man. I'll tell you what. And then I do want to hear your thoughts on all this and the game and how it played out. You can't tell me that everything surrounding the program didn't have some sort of effect. I'll never be convinced that. I'm not saying it was the reason it lost. I'm just saying, how could it not be a factor? And two, you know, two of the assistants on this staff are going to go take head jobs elsewhere. You know, Brian Hodgson is going to Arkansas State. Charlie Henry's going to Georgia Southern. So I'm not saying, like, that's just another thing on the pile. Like, there's a lot of stuff surrounding this Alabama program. And then San Diego State, it was, you know what? It's tournament of matchups, GP. San Diego State was a bad matchup for Alabama. I went on HQ earlier in the day. I said, San Diego State's got a really good chance at winning this game. Did I predict that right? Of course I did not. Of course. No shot did I predict this outright. But I did say San Diego State would cover and would keep it close and the game would be in doubt with 2 minutes to go. Well, guess what? I don't have my board here. I don't even know what's on the soundboard. I don't even want to dare touching it. All right. But I don't have the, I'll try. And that one's on me. I was wrong. Pretty close, actually. Let me try you. I was wrong. Not bad. I was wrong on that. San Diego State didn't even have a close near the end. Your thoughts on what the Aztecs, I believe you call them your Aztecs.
They're my Aztecs.
Did to the Tide.
We have a lot of history, me and my Aztecs. And so I'm happy to see them get to this point. And to do it, like, I know they only won by single digits, but like
vice
they
grip, were, GP, vice grip.
They were in control of the game, it felt like, the entire second half, and if not most of the game. And they did it while Matt Bradley, their leading scorer, was 2 of 9 from the field. I mean, what if I told you before the game, all I can tell you is that they're going to get basically nothing from Matt Bradley? You'd be like, well, how are they going to get into the 70s? And how are they going to win?
I would have told you that Brandon Miller is going to shoot 3 of 19 from the field. That's what
Jesus
I would have said.
Lord, I like you. Had San Diego State covering this game. I did not have San Diego State winning the game, but I did have San Diego State covering. And I don't know if you remember. I hope you remember. If not, I can remind you. Would you like me to remind you?
I don't remember.
Right in the middle of the season, I went ahead and guaranteed you San Diego State would go to the Sweet 16.
You did. I do remember this.
That I was committed.
I think you
to
also had A&M going to the Final Four, but the details.
I know I had A&M. I told you I would take A&M and San Diego State both to go to the Sweet 16, no matter what. One of them worked out. We don't have to talk about the other one. I'm just saying this one worked out. And how about this? If you're somebody who maybe doesn't follow the sport that closely and you go, well, a Mountain West team just eliminated the number one overall seed, I'll have you know that you can sort data over at barttorvik.com. It's a useful tool. And over the past 2 months, so you like run it from January 24th to the present.
Is that so?
Over the past 2 months.
Okay.
San Diego State is 15-2 and ranked 4th in the country at barttorvik.com.
I got one for you. I said it on HQ earlier.
You don't have one better than that.
I do. You go and you sort data since March 1. The best defensive team in the country, period, is San Diego State since March 1. Nice, clean starting date. Number one defensive efficiency. That's how we sort the data on this podcast.
I'll sort the data. I sort the data for my birthday. Okay. You get a 2-month sample size. And San Diego State is 15-2 and ranked 4th at Torvik. So that's among the reasons I had a Jerome Tang level of faith in San Diego State. But yes, even I am surprised. It's a high level. Even I am surprised that San Diego State basically controlled Alabama for much of the game and got rid of them.
Although before we move on, Bama did make a push. There was a little gap there in the second half. It looked hairy, and then speaks to Dutcher, that scout and that staff. There was no buckle.
Right.
And it was like, oh, you really think it's gonna be that easy? Like, you think you're getting rid of us like this? And they shut them down. Water turned off entirely, man.
Yeah,
it
like,
was
in the final minute, it was a one possession game. Like, it got there, but like it only got, I guess my point is they were down like 7 with a minute to go. And then it felt over. But I guess based on what we've seen over the past few, maybe you don't think anything's over. But they got it to a place where, all right, maybe they're going to have to foul, stop the clock. Aztecs are going to have to miss some free throws. Maybe they can get back in this. They had a shot, but the game felt decided for much of the final 10 minutes of that game. And then, of course, it leads to, I saw a lot of this about, because people like to say it during the season and then after it happens and Alabama is terrible from three and eliminated from the tournament, you get a lot of people talking about, well, you can't win a championship that way. Living and dying. That's the phrase everybody throws out. Living and dying with the three. Can't live and die by the three. Can't win a championship that way. And I guess when people say that, I'm always eager to point out that somebody has already won a championship playing this way, if by this way you mean living and dying by the three. And it's Villanova in 2018. Villanova, 47.5% of its field goal attempts in that season came from three. 47.5%, nearly half of their field goal attempts, nearly one out of every two, came from three-point range. This is what people tell you you can't do, live and die by the three. Villanova finished 36-4, won their final 10 games, including all six NCAA tournament games, by double digits, while launching 47.5% of its field goal attempts from three-point range. Alabama in 2023, 47.2% of its field goal attempts came from three-point range. Less of a percentage than what Villanova did in 2018 while winning the national championship. So, like, stop it with the you can't shoot threes like this and win a national championship. We've already seen somebody do it. It wasn't that long ago. And when I tweeted this, oh boy. Whew. Over and over again, people were saying, well, yeah, but Alabama went 3 of 27 from three. You can't win it. You can't win shooting like, well, of course you can't win shooting like that. Dipshit.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't shoot 3 of 27 from three and win a national championship. Doesn't that go without saying? But either way, the point remains the same. You can take roughly one out of every two shots from three and win a national championship. It's already been done. You just have to do it well. So the problem for Alabama isn't style of play. The problem for Alabama is not playing that style really well consistently, at least in this NCAA tournament. And you can point out some stuff throughout the season where you were like, okay, Villanova, though, that team was a really good three-point shooting team, and this Alabama team wasn't as good. Of course, I have access to all of the same numbers any of you are looking at. But Alabama did use this style of play to become, you ready for this, the number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament. I just have no patience for people who act like you can't win a national championship in college basketball shooting threes at that rate, because it's already been done. Alabama does not need to change its style of play. You know what Alabama needs to do? Shoot better from three. Be more consistent with it. But the style of play, the approach to basketball, which is what style of play is, the approach is fine. It's the effectiveness that has to improve. And I suspect that it will. And I know I saw people pointing out that now Alabama has been a top two seed in two of the past three NCAA tournaments and lost in the Sweet 16 both times. First in 2021 to UCLA in overtime, and then on Friday night to San Diego State by seven. And it's like, well, you know, Nate Oates, can he really get it? Trust me when I tell you, if he keeps putting together teams that are this good and get those kind of seeds, he'll break through eventually. I'll never defend him for the way he handled the Brandon Miller situation, but I'll defend him passionately as a basketball coach. And I'll never forget, because it was actually Billy Donovan who told me this. Nobody else pointed it out about Billy Donovan. Billy Donovan told me this. He said, after, you know, he'd won a national championship, then he won two. And he said, do you realize I got knocked out of the NCAA tournament five straight years in the first weekend, first or second round, five straight years, immediately before I won the national championship? People were saying about Billy Donovan, can't get out of it, can get you the tournament every year, but can't, you know, just flames out every year. That was his reputation. You know what he said? I knew if I kept building teams that were good enough, eventually something good would happen. That's the deal. Keep assembling teams that are good enough to advance in the bracket, and they won't always do it, but eventually you'll pop through. And that's going to happen for Nate Oates. The guy is recruiting at too high a level and coaching at too high of a level to not eventually have NCAA tournament success. That's coming. So if you got, as Dan Hurley might say, you know, it's on the way.
Get us now, because it's coming.
It's coming. It's coming. With Nate Oates, it's coming. He took his lump in 2021. Last season's team was just okay, like nothing special. This season's team was special. It was literally rated in the computers at certain points as the best team in the country. And then it had an awful night. And you can't do that in this tournament against a quality basketball team. So now you're gone. But as long as he keeps putting together good teams that can get these types of seeds, eventually you're going to see Alabama in an Elite Eight and in a Final Four and maybe winning a national championship.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 Central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.
The other one seed that went down was Houston, 89-75, and you could make the argument that although Miami looked good through the first weekend, it was even more surprising in the way that it happened. The Cougars, rated as the best team in the sport this season, that is gone. UConn is now the number one team at KenPom. Houston dropped its perch for the first time in months because of this loss. And Miami came correct, and boy, oh boy, this was a team that was that needed a 16-1 run to escape late from Drake in the first round. Tournament's funny like that, man. Sometimes you get one game, like you look up, you made a Final Four, and three of the four wins were easy, and there was the one that you could lost.
Look at Florida Atlantic.
Yes,
I mean
if the officials don't call the tie up,
if they call a timeout, Florida Atlantic's over with. If Kendrick Davis doesn't pretend to be Kihei Clark, Florida Atlantic's done. That kind of stuff happens in this tournament all the time.
I'll remind people, by the way, Miami lost at home to Florida State a month ago to the day, basically. They played on Friday. It was February 25th, and now it's March 25th. Congrats to Miami and Jim Larrañaga. If you didn't read my Larrañaga column, I wrote something earlier in the week, which is aging amazingly because they keep winning. 89 points, though. It's the most points Houston's allowed in a game in the last five seasons. Houston, what are we doing? It's the same thing as Bama was allowing 56.6 points a game of the season, 89 tonight, allowing opponents to 36% shooting, 51.7 for the Canes. Three-pointers per night. Houston was keeping opponents at 6.2. The U had 11 triples and shot 44% from three. Unbelievable. Houston thrived on forcing turnovers. Only forced six of them against Miami and only had 4 points off those turnovers. That was a season low. Bizarre game for Houston. I'll save a thought for Miami after. I had Houston winning it all. You had Houston winning it all. I thought that Miami would be able to win the game because of just their size, their strength, you know, their shooting. They got everything, right? Miami actually has a lot of pieces. And I had mentioned this multiple times this season in my power rankings. The metrics were down on the Canes. As we speak right now, 26 at KenPom. But this was a team that, even when it was rolling, wasn't even top 35 at KenPom. So that is what it is. But I always thought they had the roster to be better. They were the one seed in the ACC. The ACC is still in this tournament. Miami's the only one. In fact, the SEC and Big Ten got more. The SEC and Big Ten got the most teams in the field, 8 apiece. None are left in the bracket. But the Big 12 and the Big East have 2. ACC, Miami's there. Your thoughts on how Houston saw its season come to an end? Because it felt. I don't know if it felt like Houston was destined to win a title. I'm not saying that, but I did think there was a very high probability Cougars were going to be playing in their hometown in a national semifinal on a Saturday in March. I mean, in April.
I had them there. Obviously, Houston was never the type of overwhelming team that you can just go, I don't know who's beating them. I mean, Temple beat them, right? You could see them getting beat. But
it was easier for Temple to beat Houston than it is to hire a new head coach. That's where we're at.
I so isn't that... like in 2012 or especially 2015 with Kentucky, it was like, I don't know how they're not getting to the Final Four. With Houston, I never felt, I don't know how they're, I mean, if you lose to Temple, you can lose to, you can lose your round of 32 game, your Sweet 16 game, any game after that. But I'm surprised they went out the way they went out. Down six at the half and then never tied it in the second half. They were behind the entire 20 minutes, trailed by as many as 17, lost by 14. Like that, there was a moment where it was like, all right, well, here they go. And it just, and then instead of them going, it was Miami going. And it never comes down to one thing, but I did think going into it, you know, both of these teams' strengths, Houston had a lot of strengths, but Miami's strength was the guards, right? Mm-hmm. And Houston's got really good guards too. So just line them up. Sasser, Shedd, Mark, 14 of 36 from the field, 5 of 19 from three, combined for 43 points. So they shot 39% from the field, 26% from three, combined for 43 points. At Miami, Wong, Pack, Poplar, 18 of 36 from the field, 9 of 19 from three, combined for 57 points. So they shot 50% from the field, 47% from three, and combined for 57 points. Like, Miami got much better play out of its backcourt than Houston did. And the key to all of it was Nigel Pack, or at least the star of it was Nigel Pack. 7 of 10 from three, life wallet, your MVP of the game. And like you pointed out, Miami is kind of the opposite of what we sometimes refer to as computer trickers. Miami was the ACC co-champ. It's a 28-win team. Got a great coach, great guards, and started the season 42nd at KenPom. Was never higher than 31st at any point in the regular season. Was 43rd when this NCAA tournament started, and is still only at 26. Do you realize KenPom still rates 19 and 15 West Virginia seven spots better than Miami, than a Miami team that won the ACC and is in the Elite Eight? And I'm not arguing with the numbers. It's just that, you know, the data is the data. The algorithm is the algorithm. It's just interesting that Miami has, in terms of win-loss resume, all that stuff, has been a rock-solid team all season, for most of the season. But the predictive metrics never reflected that in any way whatsoever.
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating because they do have, I mean, between Wong, Miller. So Wong,
Pack, and I know I should be clear before somebody wants okay. to tweet me. Right. But like, I know the predictive metrics don't care if you have a great coach and a great backcourt. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I understand. I just don't want somebody tweeting me that. I'm tired of people tweeting
Wong,
me.
Miller, Omir, Pack, Poplar, all in double figures. And like, they just, I don't know. They're capable of having great nights from the line, getting to the line with frequency. Pretty reliable from three-point range. Not afraid to take big shots. Move the ball well. Wong is an alpha. I've been singing Miller's praises for months now. Omir is just a house. I mean, and he, yeah, listen, he outplayed Jairus Walker. He outplayed a lottery pick. There's no getting around it.
And Jairus Walker took some ridiculous shots too.
He did. There were a couple of them. I was
there
like,
was
what
one where it was like a one dribble, two dribble, yeah. 2 feet inside the arc, contested long two. It's like, what?
I know. Interesting on Houston here. They get knocked out. They go to the Big 12 next season. They can certainly get another one seed under Kelvin Sampson. That will be on the table potentially, but it won't surprise me if we look up in 5 to 7 years and they're like a good Big 12 program. But we're like, man, that was the window. Like right there, you made a Final Four, Elite Eight. Here, you don't even get the Sweet 16. But congrats to Miami for getting it done. Miami has 4 NCAA tournament wins without Jim Larrañaga and 10 with him, man. He is something else.
Do you
go ahead. I was just going to say, the only team that's made the Elite Eight in back-to-back, Miami's got the best Elite Eight streak going. It's the only team this year in the eight that was also there last year.
And the Miami women also in the Elite Eight for the first time in school history. Them Cavender twins, boy, they're always up to something, you know? Yeah, okay. They're always up to something. I watch them. They're always up to something. Do you remember when Jim went to Miami? People were like, I don't know about this.
Dude, I talked to Jim earlier this week. And he just, I saw him in Albany and I was like, hey, listen, you know, just to get on the record, like that you're not going to retire. He's like, Matt, I'm not retiring. And I've got 5 grandsons and they're all between 13 and 17. And they say, I got to coach them. So I might be going until I'm 80. And I'm like, all right, Jim, it sounds good. I was like, I'm writing this column on you. I don't want to say that you shouldn't retire. And then we look up and 2 days later, you're like, see ya. So he ain't stopping, man.
Well, why would he? He's running. He's running a hell of a pro. Like with Boeheim, it was like, all right, man, I'm not saying you need to retire because you're 76, but you might need to retire because the program is not good anymore. But Larrinaga is running an incredible program. I mean, back-to-back Elite Eights, ACC championship.
Back-to-back Elite Eights as a 5-seed or worse. It's only happened 3 times ever. This Miami team, 86-87 LSU, and then the Brad Stevens Butler teams are the only teams to make consecutive Elite Eights with a number 5 or worse seed next to their name. Congrats on the Canes, man, and congrats on Larrinaga. He's 1 win away from taking George Mason and Miami to Final Fours. Come on, man. And that's as nice. I wrote earlier in the week, here's the thing. It's not that he's the best coach in both those programs' histories. Go look at George Mason basketball history and look at Miami, which didn't have a program for more than a dozen years. They have almost no other successes when he hasn't been the coach. It's been him and nobody else for the most part. It's wild, man.
No,
Mason has not been back to the tournament since he left.
He should maybe already be in the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame.
Maybe, but this is the thing. Like, if he gets one more win, like, maybe that's the tangible thing that needs to happen. Maybe right. It does. But if he takes the Miami friggin' Hurricanes to the Final Four, get him into the hoop hall. Because he's going to get 800 wins. It is inevitable. He might get there regardless. But a second Final Four is, I think, the clincher.
I just remember when he went to Miami, first off, it wasn't even that people that were like skeptical. It wasn't just that they were skeptical. It was that folks thought this is your classic guy had some success at the mid-major school, didn't know who to hire, and he's going to go down to South Florida and retire. Like that's what people said. So that was like 12 years ago. Yeah. When he got hired,
I didn't buy that. I didn't think it would go that well. Honestly,
Miami went and hired a 61-year-old mid-major head coach, and people were like, "What, really?" And he's been great, absolutely, absolutely great, and doesn't seem close to the end. Like that's the thing. This sport, I think more so than college football, allows for coaches to continue to operate at a high level. Into their 70s. Mike Krzyzewski did it. Roy Williams did it. Rick Pitino is doing it. And Larrinaga belongs on that list and maybe closer to the top than most people realize. If folks haven't read your story, they should go check it out at cbssports.com. He's been awesome and really happy for, you know, you and I both have gotten to know Jim a little bit over the years, and he's like, he's easy and accessible.
He's as easy as it gets.
He's
man.
As easy as it gets.
He is everything you think Jim Larrinaga is. He is. We saw the dance that went viral. Like keep it up, Jim. By the way, as that article points out, he's the portal king. Every Sweet 16, every second weekend team he's had at Miami have had 3 starters that have been transfers, man. He's been getting it done.
Should it be a bigger story? Like I know people will make their life wallet jokes. But like, should it be a bigger story? Like the casual person watching these games has no idea that a billionaire Miami booster went and bought the guy who hit 7 threes tonight.
Yeah. I know.
Should that be something?
I jokingly said he's underpaid, by the way.
I mean, 7 threes for 400.
I know. It will be an even bigger story. How about this? It gets even bigger if Miami and K-State win. Shouts to Mike Miller at the Field of 68. I saw you tweet this out. Absolutely, Mike. This is, and I know he listens to the pod. K-State lost Nigel Pack and got better. Miami got Nigel Pack and got better. And both those teams could wind up in the Final Four with the most talked about transfer in college basketball last offseason. It is pretty interesting.
Buddy.
I think we lost him again.
Oh boy. I'm here. I never left.
Oh, you don't know that you left, but you did.
All right. Well, you know, did sometimes you hear everything people, I said?
You know, sometimes people wake up in the hospital and they're like, What's going on? And you're like, you've been asleep for 28 days. You don't know you've been asleep for 28 days, but we know. We know. You just went into like a 7-second coma.
Wow. I have passed out. That I have experienced before. You pass out, you wake up, you're like, whoa. You know what? What I said,
I do it all the time.
It's lost to the ages. Let's get on to Creighton Princeton.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus. Gather your besties.
We are very exclusive.
And get ready.
Mom, go make snacks.
For sure, Regina. Yeah.
For the movie that hits like a bus. In a good way.
No one died.
Mean Girls.
Rated PG-13.
Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Greetings, Fantasy Warriors. I'm Heath Cummings, your guide to fantasy dominance on FFT Dynasty. Join me this offseason where mock drafts become epic showdowns and every pick shapes your legacy.
If I was Adam, with the team that he's built, Will Levis makes so much more sense.
And that's not all. We're peeling back the curtain on the future with our exclusive 2024 NFL Draft Prospect Profiles. Uncover hidden gems that'll elevate your roster to legendary status.
Puka Nacua. After Cooper Kupp, we really have no idea who's going to get the targets.
Keaton Mitchell of East Carolina. Explosive speed is ridiculous.
This isn't just a podcast. It's a playbook for champions. Subscribe to FFT Dynasty now, and together, we'll conquer the fantasy football frontier. Your dynasty journey starts here.
So, the late night games weren't that fun. I mean, maybe Creighton Princeton was fun for a half. It was fun for a half.
It was most first half points in the entire tournament, 90 combined. So it was fun for a half. Yes.
Condolences to anybody dumb enough to take the under. Second game in the South Regional, closed for a little while, but then the higher seeded team pulled away. Creighton 86, Princeton 75. Blue Jays are in the Elite Eight for the first time since 1941. Your thoughts?
Can we call it the Elite Eight when there was an 8-team tournament? Like, you just by getting in, you're in the Elite Eight.
Yeah, I think you.
I guess 18, so.
Yeah, you're in the Elite Eight. What do you want me to do?
A note of congrats to Princeton for giving us another memorable, awesome Cinderella story. 15 seed, winning two games. That's going to be amazing every single time. And the way they did it was incredible, just dominating. And then Creighton was a different setup, man. That's a different kind of team. Ryan Kalkbrenner is a different kind of big than what Princeton faced, even in Arizona. Those are good bigs, but defensively they're not Kalkbrenner at all. And Princeton ends its season with just an all-time memory. And I actually will be interested to see if Tosano Owoma is going to be able to, if he wants to transfer, because he's the senior. Like, is he going to come back to college basketball? He did himself good, and he will be, if he wants to pursue a grad year somewhere, many a high major is going to target him. Keep an eye on him. As for Creighton,
he should go to Miami.
He should, actually. You know what? Can he transfer to Miami before right Sunday's now. Game? Is that allowed? You know, if anyone can do it, Life Wallet. Make it happen.
Well, at least give it a shot. At least give it a shot.
Yeah, take a shot. Take a shot. By the way, I can't. If the Jalen Clark injury doesn't happen here, I think Princeton's got a chance.
Don't tell me. I've been telling people for weeks now.
But so as it happens, Creighton benefits. I did have Creighton in the eight. I have Creighton in the four. I had Creighton beating Bama, though. So now they're going up against San Diego State. And Kalkbrenner, you can see here, he's got the most points in a single tournament if you're watching on video in Creighton history. Shouts to Marcus Zagorowski, by the way.
who was his brother? Yeah,
can you remember? That's the question. Can anyone in the chat remind GP who Marcus Zagorowski's fake half brother was? That's an old. It's not even that old, but we have a lot of new listeners in the past.
No, he didn't. He have a real half brother.
I thought he was the fake one.
No, the
chat's
fake
gonna
one.
Have to come. Is there anyone watching in real time at this hour? That's
Marcus
remember?
Zagorowski and Michael Carter Williams.
Is that what it was?
Our okay. real half brothers.
Okay.
And
yes.
I decided.
Who was the fake one? You're right.
I think I remember. I think I decided that was so funny to me. It just doesn't sound like two people.
Chad is coming through immediately. That's
I talk about nothing
right
other
there.
Than the names, and the names just don't sound like the brothers. Michael Carter Williams and Marcus Zagorowski. And so I decided that Jalen Crutcher and Killian Tilly.
That's what it was. Oh, my gosh.
I said Jalen Crutcher and Killian Tilly were half brothers. I just started
you
saying
you don't
it
know
like
where you
true.
Were yesterday, but that is a good pull. That is great. That is great stuff, man. Kalkbrenner had 22. Shireman had 21. What an all-time pull that is. Trey Alexander had 19. Creighton shot 58% from the field. Amazing performance. Jays living up to the preseason hype. top 10 team for the first time in program history back in the fall. Kalkbrenner got mono, and now it's a rematch, by the way. San Diego State and Creighton played last year in the first round of the tournament, man. Did you remember that?
The only thing I remember is that
Creighton won.
I decided Jalen Crutcher and Killian Tilly were half brothers.
Yeah, that's true. Kalkbrenner got hurt in that game.
This dude's so always getting hurt or
I know. Well, let's see if he can stay healthy here. Creighton moves along into the eight. One of two biggest teams still there, obviously, with UConn. And it was an impressive pull away in the second half. Greg McDermott and the Jays. That's going to be, I'll tell you what, prepping for Princeton. Princeton and Creighton, actually, the way that they played was very similar, not just in the game, but just their styles of play was very similar. And I thought that might benefit Princeton in the long run. They just didn't have the gas to pull it out. And now you got to turn around 2 days. You got 2 days, 2 day rest, really 1 day rest, play a San Diego State team that's very different. What were your thoughts on what the Jays did?
Well, like they just pulled away in the second half and made the, like, I just wanted to watch one of these after what we got Thursday night. I just wanted one game with some drama in the final minutes, and we just didn't get that late at night. Still, for Princeton, it's a Sweet 16. Like that's amazing. And you lost the game. You were supposed to lose the game. You lost it about the way you were expected to lose it. I think they were 10-point underdogs, lost by 11. You played them really competitively for a half. And then the better team just took over. And Kalkbrenner, 22 points, 5 rebounds. I don't know if you know this. Mm. You can sort data over at barttorvik.com.
I invented sorting the data. All right.
Ryan Kalkbrenner came back from mononucleosis.
You ever had mono, by the way?
I don't think I have.
I have, but you know what? It's late and we're at 52-minute mark. We can't get this thing off the rails. I have, though, back in the day.
I'll get it if you want me to.
You know what? For the pod,
I'm not scared of it.
All right. I don't want you flirting with it. I don't need you flirting with it. I'll get mononucleosis. You do it enough on your own. Let's not.
I'm not scared of mononucleosis. What do I got to do to get it?
Can we avoid what do I gotta do to get before it? The Final Four, please? Because we still have content to do.
No, I think I want some mononucleosis. Where can I get it?
I don't know.
Maybe the subway.
Maybe I should just go to the subway.
Maybe I should just walk out of this hotel when we're done and go to the subway and look for some mononucleosis. It's out there somewhere.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
I just got to find it. Since he returned from mononucleosis, Creighton's 18-6 and ranked 7th at barttorvik.com. High-level team. Been playing well for a long time. So that was that. Whatever. If I'm being completely honest, kind of lost interest in the game.
I know you did.
The final game of the night.
If you lost interest in that game, then let's get to Xavier, Texas.
The late night games were terrible. I just wanted something.
I really wanted Xavier. That's the two. And it's the 2-3. You know, just Xavier down 17 at the half, man. Largest halftime deficit they had all season. Tough stuff. But listen, credit to Texas. This is who this team has been for much of the past, you know, 4 or 5 weeks. I mean, Christian Bishop coming off. You talk about another transfer situation. Former Creighton Blue Jay on Texas. Interesting thing there. He had 18. Tyrese Hunter. He'll disappear on you for 3 or 4 games and then just pop up and be awesome. And that's what he was here. Marcus Carr continues to play well. Sir Jabari Rice continues to play well. Just the guards, the physicality. Texas, 52% from the field. It just outclassed Xavier entirely, shut down Sule Boom for the most part. He ended up with 12, but he was non-existent in the first half. Kunkel played well. Nungy was okay. They didn't have a lot of depth. They just didn't have it, man. Texas is a better team, no doubt. They run away with it. Like, the final margin was 12. This was a 20-point game for the majority of the night. But Xavier fans take this, of course. You get Sean Miller, year one, top two team in the Big East, a 3 next to your school's name in the tournament, and a Sweet 16 run. You're doing just fine now.
Are you kidding me? Like, and you lost Zach Fremantle.
Yeah, you didn't have Fremantle.
Second leading scorer and leading rebounder in January. You lose Fremantle in January. You never have a healthy Jalen Clark, and you still end up in the Sweet 16. You take that every day.
You take it. Now, there'll be some roster reconstruction. We'll see. But good on X for a good year. At Texas now, into the eight.
First time since 2008. yep. into the Elite Eight. Shouts to DJ Augustine.
Yeah.
Shouts to
yeah.
Dexter Pittman.
Yeah. Not shouts to Kevin Durant, though. That was 07. Didn't even get past USC.
Do you remember who eliminated Texas in the Elite
Eight? O.J. Mayo.
O.J. Mayo?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking 2008 Elite Eight.
Oh, okay. Was that O.J. Mayo?
No.
08 Elite Eight, Texas. Ooh, good trivia time here. Let's see. So 08 Elite Eight would have been Kansas over Davidson. Who knocked out Texas? Would that have been? Was that Michigan State? Carolina?
No, but Michigan State had already been eliminated by the same team.
Uh-huh, look at us now. Who beat Texas in 08? What region?
No,
okay, here we go.
One of them. One of them. Yeah, one of those regions, one of the four. We had four regions and Texas was in one of them.
It wasn't UCLA, it wasn't Kansas. It wasn't Memphis. Who am I missing? Tell me.
85-67.
That was a
rout. Derrick Rose, Chris Douglas, Robertson, Joey.
They did it. It was Memphis. It was Memphis. No, because that did it. I don't remember the game.
The thing you got to remember about that.
Yeah, I don't remember this game.
Who was my point? Who was my point guard at Michigan State that year? It's my favorite guy ever.
Neitzel, boy. Neitzel, buddy.
Neitzel.
Neitzel.
Okay, so Derrick Rose in succession blew out Drew Neitzel, blew out DJ Augustine, and then blew out Darren Collison, Russell Westbrook.
Yeah. And then what happened?
Well,
yeah, there we go.
Dozier for the championship happened.
Dozier for the championship. No, and we're going to overtime. That's right. Good on Texas.
Poor Jim Nance, by the way. He sounded so upset.
I was in HQ. I was listening to stuff. I didn't hear the Houston call. I was actually wondering how that was going down. I didn't hear the play.
He sounded disappointed. I mean, listen, he's the best. So when it was time to celebrate Miami, he celebrated Miami. But you could tell, like, his heart was broken a little bit, you know? And it should be.
We didn't get the Nance call in Houston. That's unfortunate. I tweeted on Texas that Crystal Connie just needs to come on. What are we doing? Like, why are we wasting our time? Just announce Rodney Terry. And then
And
Pomeroy wanted to dunk on me. Well, what good does it do it now? I mean, nothing, but why not at this point?
I understand
if you weren't going to originally hire, he has done a good enough job. Don't give him a 9-year contract. Why not sign Rodney Terry to a 4-year deal? See if it works. If you wake up in 2 years and it's not working, then you start anew. You are not getting the big guy that you wanted at this point. I think if that was the case, there'd be more buzz around it. Hasn't happened. Terry's won 75% of his games since he took over, won the Big 12 postseason title, got a 2 seed now into the Elite Eight, a game away from the Final Four. Just go ahead and name him the coach. They're going to take the interim tag off. I don't want to say no shot. I'm putting it at 90% that Rodney Terry's getting this job. I just wonder when and how are they going to announce this? Does he need to formally interview? Do they have to go through some stuff with the Board of Regents before this happens? That's probably the answer to this. I just don't see what the damage is in coming out and saying, we're so proud of what Rodney's been able to do, and we're going to make him our next head coach. That's just my take on it.
The damage would be, and like I say this as someone who likes Rodney Terry, and I want him to get the job because I like Rodney Terry, and I'd like to see him get the job. But there is a massive difference. I think both of these things can be true. I like Rodney Terry, and I hope he gets the job. But there is a massive difference between taking over a top 10 team and keeping it a top 10 team and running a top 10 program. Those are two different skill sets. This team
might not work.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, if you were the Texas administration, what if you've got, you don't think they can hire the big name that might go, oh, wow. And you might be right. I don't know. We'll see. But is there anybody you can think of that you'd go, oh, wow, if you can hire that guy, I don't care what Rodney Terry's done, you got to hire that guy.
Sure, but I don't think those names are
out
there.
Okay, well, what if they get that guy then? Because if they can get that guy, then everybody's saying you have to hire Rodney Terry
if
now,
they can.
Then they're wrong.
Listen, is there the chance that CDC has that guy, Crystal Connie? There's a chance. My signals aren't indicating that. But if he has the guy, I'll make a crow noise on the pod. And then I'll metaphorically.
I heard a big name today, and I don't know that I even buy it, but I did. Somebody floated. I don't even know about floated. Somebody was like, "Have you heard this?" And it was a big name that if you that
I mean,
if
this, I guess said, it's possible, but
if I said it right, if I said it, you'd go.
You'd be like, "Well, you gotta go."
You'd say.
I'll say this. I'm not gonna. You don't even.
If
have to
I
deny.
Said the name to you, you would say, "Well,
you don't
of
have to confirm or deny this." But I will say this: you don't have to confirm or deny if this is a name that got floated. However, the one that's out there is like, "Would Billy Donovan go?" Billy Donovan is close to Shaka Smart, and the ending at Texas wasn't great. And my understanding is Billy Donovan would never go to coach at Texas because of how it ended with Shaka Smart. So I'm not saying that's who the name is.
But, I'm not saying that's the name either, yeah. And I'm not saying it didn't end awkwardly with Shaka Smart, but. If you're Billy Donovan, do you really not take a job because of how you think maybe. Shaka Smart?
I don't think Billy Donovan wants to go back to college basketball right now. I think if Billy Donovan ever comes back, it's Kentucky or nothing.
Listen, I'm not saying Billy Donovan's going to be the next head coach of Texas. I'm just saying that if you are somebody who insists Texas should hire Rodney Terry today, you are eliminating the idea that they could hire somebody that you yourself would say, well, you can't hire Rodney Terry if you can hire that guy.
Yeah.
So
I mean, there's a few out there, but yeah,
listen, if Texas hires Rodney Terry tomorrow, removes the interim tag, I'm not going to say, ooh, emergency podcast. I can't believe Texas did this. That's this is sure. crazy. Right. Probably because I'll be asleep till like noon. if I can pull it
let's
off.
Let's have a race.
If I can
let's
pull
have
it
a race
off
on that. Yeah.
But I don't think it's crazy to wait it out. And I don't think it's crazy to not instinctively hire somebody because they're being successful in the moment with a team that they inherited. Can I remind you about Wichita State? And it's apples to oranges on some level.
It is. I'm not guaranteeing that's going to have success. I hear what you're saying.
Here's the way the Wichita State situation and the Texas situation are similar. And then we'll get out of here because it's, I mean, Christ. yeah. When on the day that Wichita State had to fire Greg Marshall, they had no plans of hiring Isaac Brown. Zero. They would have never. If you just said, oh, is Isaac going to get the job? No. Are you crazy? Mm-hmm. No plans to do that. And then he did well with that team. And so they said, I guess we got to hire him because he did well. 2 years later, he's fired. All right. When on the day Chris Beard got fired, I don't think Texas wanted to hire Rodney Terry.
I don't either.
Okay, so it's a similar situation, and so okay, well, but now we have to hire him because he's done so well with this team. Do you? Because that's what people keep saying. You have to hire him, and I
don't say you have to hire him. I think he's done enough to earn the job, and I don't know if there is another candidate on the outside lurking.
My point. Simply winning, even at this level. With a Chris Beard built team is not, quote, doing enough to earn the job, because I don't think that's a skill set that necessarily proves you've earned the job. And this feels a lot like when we talked about Charleston earlier in the year.
Hate him. You can't stand him.
I love Charleston. I love Pat Kelsey. But I was like, I don't know why this team's in the top 25. And here's another situation. I love Rodney Terry. I want him to get the job.
Guys getting ready to coach in Elite Eight, you're just burying him.
I want him to get the job. I'm just saying, I fundamentally think it's logically nonsensical to think because a guy's won X amount of games as an interim coach that he's definitely the best guy, or he's proved that he's the best guy to lead your program into the future. I don't think those two things line up.
I got you.
Necessarily.
Let's get out of here on this. And then listen, we're not previewing the Elite Eight. We're going to recap all that. We got some great games. Actually, quick picks. I'm going to go Gonzaga beats UConn because I have Gonzaga in the four to begin with. I'll go Texas over Miami, Jays over Aztecs. And yeah, FAU to the four, beating Kansas State. Who are your four winners in the Elite Eight?
I've got Kansas State over Florida Atlantic, but I don't feel strong. Atlantic is good enough to win this game.
Oh, you bet your ass they are.
They are. The Owls are good. That Marquise Noel thing, that was so all-timer. Oh, I mean, dude, you were in the garden. It was a top 10 tournament
game I've ever covered, and an amazing scene, and to be back in the back bowels with him, all that stuff. It was just
I don't root against Florida Atlantic. because if Florida Atlantic wins, I'll be thrilled for Dusty. But I like the – I like both of these coaches. I like both of these programs. I just – the idea of Marquise Noel going wild in the Garden again is awesome. All right? That's the best thing.
Yeah.
So I think I go Kansas State. I'll take Kansas State to win. UConn, I have in my original bracket as a Final Four team. So I'll pick UConn again. 2-point favorite, by the way. But I really like if the Zags win that game, dude, they might become the favorite to win the national championship.
We're not doing that stuff again, but I got to tell you, because I was at the guard, I was not in any position to podcast. I was way too busy, all this stuff. I want to watch I saw bits and pieces. Now I saw the ending. Like, I want to watch the Gonzaga UCLA game. Start dude, to finish. I'm going to find the time to watch the game in full because I didn't see Timmy. I saw the final 3 minutes of the game and I saw like a highlight here. Timmy going out and absolutely dominating fools. Are you kidding me with what he was doing?
36 points. You ready for this? You let Drew Timmy go for 30 again against UConn and get a win. We got to submit ballots for National Player of the Year. I'm going Drew Timmy against Zaga.
It is. Drew Timmy's going to be mine if he does this. If he carries them to a Final Four, it's up for debate.
Absolutely.
Now I'm not going to discard what Edie did, but it would be up for debate. And I'm sure our listenership appreciated you and KB getting into that game. So, but that just was
the game was wild.
It was an awesome thing to experience in the Garden. I had like 10 media people around me watching on our computer, and we're going nuts because that Strother shot. He's out of his damn mind, even taking the thing to begin with. But he goes instant legend with it. It's incredible. You've got UConn. I've got
the Zags. So I've got Kansas State and UConn in the Final Four. And then I've got, man. I hadn't even thought about this.
You can't fire Rodney Terry and have Texas win at the same time. Whew.
I'm taking my Aztecs to the Final Four.
Yeah, you are.
They're mine.
Yeah.
Me and the Aztecs have grown up together. Taking the Aztecs to... And then I'll go Rodney Terry.
All right, there we go.
And by the way, if he gets to the Final Four, they're going to hire him.
They don't have a choice. I don't think they have a choice. I think they're hiring him.
We've reached the point where like the post-game interviews are Rodney, you're still the interim coach. Why? I mean, that's where we're at now.
You're asking the wrong guy.
Yeah. Hey, Rodney Terry, you just won again. Why have they not made you the permanent head coach? I mean, that's where we're at.
It is.
So I'll take San Diego State. So the Final Four, according to me, is going to be San Diego State, Texas, Kansas State, and UConn.
And I've got Creighton, FAU, Gonzaga, Texas. So we only have Texas of the four. How about that? We got some good healthy.
Which means Rodney Terry's career is over.
It's done. It's done for him. It's over.
Because we both just picked Texas. It's over.
Dude, we really went an hour 10.
That's awful.
Dude, I'm on 4 hours. It's outrageous. I got to drive home.
I'm on 5.
I got to drive home. Let's go.
Well, I mean, I don't want to lose you.
Let's go.
I don't want to lose you to like, falling asleep on the road or anything like that.
I won't.
Okay. Says the man that wants to get mono.
That's true.
I'm just saying I'm not scared of mono and I'll get it if it proves. How tough I am, I'm happy to get it. I don't want to lose you, to a late night single car accident. So please be careful. But
I'm about to let's go. Get this juju out of here.
Cal Boone did a great Al impersonation. So like and we're thinking about starting an OnlyFans, Cal Boone and I.
I don't even need to know, nor do I want to.
Shouts to Devin Downey. Shouts to Chester. I just realized that I'm 2 a.m. yelling in a hotel room.
Yeah,
shouts to Chester, South Carolina. Shouts to Huck. Shouts to Larnell. Thank you guys once again for listening, watching the Island College Basketball
Anyone
Podcast.
Anyone even still here at HQ, by the way?
You tell me. Open up that door. See what's out there.
How many people are still here?
It's a metaphor for life. Sometimes you just got to open the door what's out there.
All right, you do the shouts. I'm going to get a count right now. Hold on.
Get a count. Bring them in if you want to. Shouts to Huck and Larnell. I think we've already done that. If you're not subscribed, please go subscribe anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Over at Apple, leave a nice review. Five stars, type some words. There's more of us than there are of them. That needs to be reflected in the comments. Anybody there, Deadland?
12 still in the building, including me. When we wrapped our Selection Sunday pod, 4 still in the building. 12 still grinding. CBS Sports HQ. Thank you to everyone that watched. I'll be back on HQ from the Garden on Saturday, interviewing the winning coach and players, probably on the court. If not, right there in the back bowels. We'll see if it's FAU, Dusty May, or Jerome Tang and the Wildcats. And then we will podcast. We may be podcasting it tomorrow night together. I don't know how that's going to work. We got to go, though.
I'll be here tomorrow night. I'll be a CBS Sports Network all day, and then back here podcasting late on Saturday night after we have 2 tickets punch to the Final Four. Till then, take care. Bye-bye!
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire, now streaming on Paramount+.